were very pleased with the level of interest that we got. We had four qualified bidders.
An Australian company wins a Matanuska Valley coal lease. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state assistance for damage from the winter storms.
Maybe some damage to their roofs or their siding. We have had a couple callers that have had storm surge water come into the homes.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
Legislators today released 30 new bills that will be formally read into the record when the House and Senate convene later this month. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The bills made public add to those already on the table from last year's legislative session, and they cover a wide range of topics. Some promise to be controversial, and the public might welcome some of them. Fairbanks Democrat Scott Kawasaki wants to make it illegal for political campaigns to use those automated pre-recorded phone messages or robocalls to contact voters. And Chugiak Republican Bill Stoltz wants to make illegal the substance sold as bath salts, a synthetic form of cathinone that affects users in a way similar to meth. Another higher-profile bill would remove doubts that it's illegal to send or read text messages when driving. Haines Republican Bill Thomas and Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra have jointly sponsored the bill. Guerra says it came about after some judges followed the logic of a Kenai magistrate who raised doubts about the existing law banning the use of screens in moving vehicles.
Representative Thomas and I have talked about it. You're a moving weapon if you're looking at a keyboard while you're supposed to be driving, because you're driving a 3,000-pound car while you're essentially playing a game. And we have to shift the public's attitude from this is just socializing, which I understand, to realizing that you've become a weapon now and you can kill somebody.
Guerra says the bill is specific and does not relate to any other cell phone bills that are pending in the legislature. A constitutional amendment will be up for consideration. This one by Anchorage Democrat Bill Wilikowski would automatically put two-thirds of any excess reserves directly into the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, which would protect it from being spent by a simple majority vote of the House and Senate. That would only happen, though, if voters approve the measure during this fall's elections. And Anchorage's Johnny Ellis has a bill that would put $2 billion toward covering the anticipated shortfall in state pension needs. He would also put another $2 billion directly into the body of the permanent fund. The 30 new bills will be referred to committees on January 17th when the legislature begins its 90-day session. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Lands Office has announced the winning bid for a Matanuska Valley coal lease. Greg Jones, executive director for the Trust Lands Office, says an Australian company got the nod.
The high bidder was Riversdale Resources Limited, an Australian company. They have experience in large mines in other parts of the world, none in Alaska, to the best of my knowledge.
Riversdale submitted a bonus bid totaling $3 million. Jones says there's still some loose ends before finalizing the award.
The next is to finish the paperwork. They have to submit proof of insurance. They have to provide us with a bond. There's a transfer of the funds, and then we have to verify all of that before we can actually award. But we're in that process now. We've sent out the formal letters to them indicating that they won the bid.
Jones says he was surprised by the amount of interest in the lease offering. Usabelli Coal, Alaska Mining and Energy, and Arctic Coal LLC also bid on the lease. The 9,927-acre lease is located near Chickaloon. and it is believed to contain low sulfur bituminous coal. The lease is $4 per acre per year, adjusted at five-year intervals. The trust will receive a royalty of 5% of the gross value of any coal mined and sold. But Jones says at this point, the lease only gives Riversdale limited rights.
The only thing that we have to lease is the right to explore our subsurface rights on the property.
Riversdale must apply for an exploration permit through the State Department of Natural Resources in order to evaluate the lease area and determine if the coal resource can be mined. But some citizens of the Matanuska Valley are opposed to coal mining near homes. Coal mining opponents say coal dust poses a threat to health and the mining activity noise disrupts quality of life for those who live nearby. Jennifer Harrison, Executive Director for Chicoloon Village Traditional Council, says the council is against coal mining.
The Chicoloon Village Traditional Council passed an official resolution that opposes all irresponsible coal mining in our cultural and traditional areas, which we have relied upon since the beginning of time and continues to be linked to our spiritual and cultural way of life. So this coal mine, we feel, is in our area, and if it's going to be irresponsibly developed, then we are opposing it.
Harrison says the coal lease area is too close to homes.
Coal mining trucks probably be driving right by their homes. I mean, they haven't developed a mining plan yet, but I would be fearful that would be part of their plan.
Jones says trust lands leased for development provide income for state mental health and alcohol and drug dependency programs. The Bering Sea in November brought a series of storms affecting coastal communities from the Aleutians to northwest Alaska. Some YK Delta villages clocked winds of close to 100 miles per hour. Now the state is reaching out to residents with grant money to help them pay for some of the damages. From KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes has more.
Residents in western Alaska who were affected by the Bering Sea storms can apply for about $15,000 in individual assistance from the state.
It's covering the storms that went between November roughly 7th till the 14th.
Octavia Thompson is the individual assistance branch chief. She says individual assistance covers items that were damaged or destroyed that affect people and their homes. The state has a public assistance program that covers other things like roads and public infrastructure, but the individual grants focus on personal possessions.
Maybe some damage to their roofs or their siding. We have had a couple callers that have had storm surge water come into the homes, froze some things up, and now they have some frozen floors and insulation underneath the house. A couple folks have lost boats. So any kind of personal property type things.
To apply for the assistance, up to $15,700, it starts with a phone call. Residents identify their damages through an over-the-phone application process. Then the application is sent to the residents for their signature. Thompson says some verification is required.
Whether it's proof of ownership, provide photos of before and after if possible, and even, you know, if they've had to fix things in the meantime, if they have receipts already for those items.
Jeremy Zedek, a spokesperson for the state's Department of Homeland Security, says it's really important for people to keep track of their receipts.
If folks do have damage to their home and maybe roofing has blown off and water is coming in, that they should make those necessary temporary repairs, take photos before they begin the repairs, and keep all of their receipts for those costs because those can be eligible for reimbursement as well.
Thompson says the process has a pretty quick turnaround. Residents could see grant money anywhere from 2 weeks to a couple of months, depending on how fast they get the required information turned in. The deadline to apply for the assistance is February 3rd. Thompson says that's very critical.
If they decide that, oh, I'm going to wait until things thaw out a little bit and then I'm going to call in, well, then it will be past the deadline and we won't be able to take their calls. So it's real important that they call in before the February 3rd, even if they think they might have some damage, to at least get that application in and we can start working it from there.
The toll-free number to call is 1-855-445-7131. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a training center at Fort Wainwright is dedicated to a soldier from Fairbanks.
It didn't seem like anything fazed him. He was just hard charging, always ready to go. Just wanted to be up front, lead.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by Atwood Foundation and Alaska Children's Trust.
The Renda and Healy have been moving through the ice since midnight. With the vessels 2.5 days out, the operation is now moving into its critical phase as people and equipment mobilize to Nome. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
The vessels were making good progress earlier today through the ice, cruising at 7 knots. They are now northwest of Nunavik Island, moving through 12 to 18 inches of ice. Kathleen Cole, the sea ice program leader with the National Weather Service, says later today or tonight they'll hit ice 20 inches thick. Vitus Marine CEO Mark Smith says the two are making good progress, but there are still some kinks to be worked out.
The Renda and the Healy are trying to establish what the best distances are for escort as they travel up through the ice. This is their first day of working together, and we imagine that there'll be some complications as they just work those distances out so that it works appropriately.
Smith says if the distance between the two vessels is too far, ice can move back into the path and cause complications. Coast Guard Petty Officer First Class David Mosley says the two were about 1,000 yards apart earlier this afternoon. The two vessels are expected to reach town early Monday. The operation cleared a major hurdle yesterday afternoon when the State Department of Environmental Conservation approved the operation's oil spill response and contingency plans. The approval adds conditions requiring that the initial hookup be done during daylight hours. As the vessels get closer, the pieces on the ground and ice in Nome are coming together. Harbor crews have tested the fuel transfer equipment and built a snow ramp to run hoses up to the hookups. The Renda will not make it into the harbor. She will be moored offshore, perhaps 850 feet from the headers, or 300 or 400 feet from the end of the breakwater. The Renda carries sections of hose around 1,000 feet long. Nothing is set in stone for the final leg of the operation, but Smith says the team is confident in the ice conditions around Nome.
We've looked at the ice experts' evaluation of the conditions just off the breakwater. It's very apparent that we have a good, solid section of shore fast ice. So we have a high confidence level that coming in just outside the breakwater will provide us the shore fast ice to maintain the vessel in one position.
Around the ports, emergency equipment is being staged in warm storage as temperatures hover around 30 below. The Coast Guard is bringing in more equipment and personnel. An HH-65 Dolphin helicopter from the Healy will be based at the Nome Airport. The Guard is dispatching a C-130 for overhead support during the operation, plus daily flights leading up to early next week. And in addition to the Healy's crew, Coast Guard spokesman Mosley says specialty teams from Anchorage will be on hand.
We'll be sending maritime safety specialists to oversee the safe transfer of the fuel from the vessel to shore. We'll be bringing other support personnel to help ensure the enforcement of the safety zone as needed and other logistical concerns and needs throughout the operation.
Mosley says those safety zones around the vessels will be important.
When the vessels get there, the ice breaking operations themselves may weaken the ice, so we're encouraging everybody to stay away from ice breaking operations, as well as there will be a 100-yard safety zone around the fuel ship Renda and a 50-yard safety zone around any fuel hoses or operations taking place on the ice.
With yesterday's approval of the fuel transfer plans, the operation now has the blessing of the state. The final decision to move fuel, however, will be made on scene by regulators and industry officials. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
A training center at Fort Wainwright has been named for a soldier from Fairbanks who was killed in Afghanistan. The training center support center was dedicated yesterday in memory of Sergeant Joel Clarkson. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Sergeant Clarkson was a team leader in the Army's Elite Ranger Corps based at Fort Lewis, Washington. He was on his fifth overseas deployment in March 2010 when he died of injuries suffered in a firefight in Afghanistan. At a ceremony on post, Fort Wainwright Training Support Officer Arlie Nethkin read from a bronze plaque unveiled outside the training center, quoting Sergeant Clarkson's superiors.
From Colonel Michael Carrillo, who was commanding the 75th Ranger Regiment at the time. His words, Sergeant Clarkson was the epitome of the Ranger team leader. He cared deeply for his men, always led from the front, and was at his best when the situation was most dire. He is a hero to our nation, the Army, and his family. The words of Colonel Mark Odom, who commanded the 2nd Ranger Battalion at the time and is now the commanding officer of 75th Ranger Regiment. Thoughtful, fearless, and engaging, Sergeant Clarkson possessed that intangible stuff we desire most in Ranger, the stuff legends are made of.
Nethkin says it's very fitting that the Fort Wainwright Training Center is named for Sergeant Clarkson because it provides high-tech battlefield simulation training for the kind of dangerous work Clarkson did. Nethkin says all soldiers' sacrifices are great, but Sergeant Clarkson was a local man who served at a very high level.
Here's a kid who went to Nordale School. He went to Tannenau School. He went to Lathrop High School. He didn't just join the Army. He became a Ranger, which means that he had to pass a series of gates just to make it in the door. And then it doesn't end there. He has to compete to stay there. It's not one of those, hey, I'm in the club, I get to stay. No, it's a very ruthless environment.
Clarkson's family attended the dedication event along with several members of his Ranger unit from Fort Lewis. Staff Sergeant David Ray, who served two tours in Iraq with Clarkson, described him as a great soldier and friend.
Very energetic, very personable, wasn't afraid to talk to anybody. He was very outgoing. If you just needed someone to talk to, he was always there. He didn't seem like anything fazed him. He was just hard charging, always ready to go. Just wanted to be up front, lead.
Sergeant Ray also honored his comrade last spring by participating in a Ranger Climb for the Fallen on Mount McKinley. Ray says he left Clarkson's dog tags on Denali's summit, a fitting tribute to the man he says was very proud of being from Alaska. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by the State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ellen Lockyer. This week on AK, sprouts growing right here in frigid Alaska. Fresh, locally grown vegetables are getting easier to find in Alaska in the summer, but they are still very scarce in the winter. An entrepreneur in Anchorage is starting to change that. He's growing sprouts and basil and making tofu in a small windowless building in Spinard. Alaska Sprouts mostly sells to local restaurants right now, but is hoping to expand into the retail market. APRN's Annie Feit dropped by the operation and has this story.
When you're growing vegetables indoors, when it's minus 5 outdoors, there are a few unique variables to consider.
Is your car warm enough, do you think, for that?
For
the basil?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
like making sure the basil doesn't sit too long in a cold car. On this morning, an Alaska Sprouts employee is delivering the basil plants to Nusagaya Market. Basil is a relatively new plant for Alaska Sprouts. Owner S.J. Klein says it costs him $15 in electricity to produce $20 worth of cut basil, so he started selling whole plants instead.
The basil market's huge in Alaska, but, the energy issues, there's a reason why most of the basil that you buy in Alaska comes from California and Hawaii. You know, sunlight's cheap, and we don't have much of it right now.
Still, Klein is optimistic he'll eventually figure out how to make more money from basil. And since he launched Alaska Sprouts 3 years ago, figuring things out is something Klein has had to do very well. He says it's not an easy business to succeed in.
The sprout business, like any part of the grocery business, is very competitive. And it's a do-or-die business. If you do something poorly, you're done.
He says he can't beat the prices Lower 48 companies offer, but he can compete on freshness and quality.
Like in LA, they make sprouts and tofu for a population of 10 million. When I'm competing with that kind of scale of operation, if it's just on price, I'll never win.
When he bought the sprout growing equipment, a tofu making set was included in the deal. So one room of the business is dedicated to tofu production. When Klein shows me inside, it's like walking into a steam room, which helps explain why he's dressed in heavy duty waders like a fisherman.
This is tofu making regalia. Yeah.
Does it get pretty messy?
It can. Yeah. See, every once in a while, there's a tofu explosion.
Today, the tofu hasn't exploded, but there is another problem.
When I press it, a lot of the stuff is going to go through.
All right, so yeah, let's dump this one. We'll start over.
The soy milk made on-site wasn't fresh enough, and so the tofu didn't form properly. Klein works with his employee to dispose of it.
And
oh, you're going to pick up the...
Yeah,
the,
pick up
I
each
think it's
side.
Gonna rip.
No, no, we'll pick it up and we'll drain it. Right there. Oh! Yum!
Minor hiccups aside, Klein says the tofu business is going well. He sells it and sprouts to many of the Thai, Lao, and Vietnamese restaurants in town. He says food safety has to be a big focus, especially with the sprouts, because they're so easily contaminated.
The conditions for growing sprouts are really perfect for growing anything. And, you know, we have a food system where, I mean, you've got salmonella on tomatoes, and spinach is contaminated, and peppers, and, you know, I mean, seeds can be contaminated too. So we take a lot of precautions. We follow all the recommendations that the FDA has put out, and I mean we constantly work to make sure that the food that we sell is safe.
Klein says health inspectors visit regularly. He hasn't yet heard from the Anchorage police, but he can imagine his operation attracting their attention.
I've got a friend who's a cop, and he asked me what I was doing one day. I hadn't seen him in a while. I'm like, oh, I've got a small indoor growing operation, and totally his eyebrows raised, and I'm like, it's okay, I grow sprouts. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have high water usage, pretty high electricity usage here, lots of gas. I mean, and it's a windowless building, so... If I didn't know any better, I'd be curious too.
Klein appears to be very good at multitasking. Even during our interview, he's on the job, dipping an electronic contraption into a plastic cup of fresh soy milk.
Hey, Justin. Go! 6.75.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like a vintner, he's measuring the sugar content or strength of the soy milk. That lets him know how much milk will be needed to make tofu. Klein hopes his tofu and other food will eventually be widely available in local grocery stores. For now, though, he seems content to perfect his craft.
It's a lot of fun.
Is it sort of cool to, on a day when it's below zero, to come in here and see green things?
Oh, yeah. It's, especially you can, when we're harvesting our basil, just it's all over your face and skin, and you know, you can't get rid of the smell of basil the rest of the day.
Klein says each year operating Alaska Sprouts has been a bit better than the last, and after apologizing for the horrible pun, says business is definitely growing. For AK, I'm Annie Feit.
Now it's time for 300 Villages, AK's weekly trip around the state. Can you guess what city closes its offices when the temperature hits 40 below zero? If you guessed Delta Junction, you're right. It's a thriving community at the crossroads of the Richardson and Alaska highways.
I'm Mary Leith from Delta Junction. I work at the Delta High School Library. We're about 100 miles southeast of Fairbanks, where the Alaska Highway meets the Richardson Highway. We get traffic coming from the north. We also get things coming from up from Valdez that have come in on boats and such. And then those that come in on the Alaska Highway. So, yes, we have traffic coming from all directions. Yeah, we run year-round. It is a little slower in the winter, but even so, we are a hub. And we've got a lot of state offices and things here. We have a mixed of things here. We're 5 miles from Fort Greely and Missile Defense. You know, we've got in the military training area because they've got so many acres out here and everything. So we've got that as a big part of our community. We also have agriculture, farmers that grow barley and such. And then we have Pogo Mine to the northeast of us. And then, like, all the different state offices and everything that are here is part of our economy because we're a hub, you know. We've got a lot of open area for people to run. We've got the Clearwater River and Clearwater Lake here, which people come and fish in. Yeah, and we've got a group here that does indeed, as part of our fair now, that they do have bring in lots of different bands and, you know, have them playing all the time on the stages. And it's another committed volunteer group that organizes all that as part of the fair. One of those things that people from everywhere else always seem to think about Delta Junction is that it's always windy. And yes, we do get a wind out of the mountains, but it's not always windy. I tell you what, I have driven into town before and had just enough moisture in the air that you can still see the mountains, but it magnifies a bit. And just had it catch my breath, the sun shining and the moisture in the air magnifying, and it looks like they've moved 10 miles closer toward town. And it's beautiful. You know, we're lucky we got one of the best views that you could, you know. Fairbanks people always say, you guys have such a beautiful view of the world from up here.
That was Mary Leith, a school librarian and Delta Junction's volunteer mayor. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on air. Thanks for listening to AK on Alaska News Nightly. We had help this week from Annie Feit and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ben Matheson in Nome. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Learn more by participating in one of their informational teleconferences to be held in January. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.